finally, we're back. If you're one of the people who reached out to ask when No Cure for Curiosity was coming back, the answer is today. I have been planning this episode for almost 6 months. Seriously. I was so excited to share it with you, but obstacles, some professional, some technical, some familial, all conspire to slow me down. But we're here now. I am Shawnee Luft, the Associate Dean of University College at UWSP. I believe curiosity is essential for learning, for thinking, for solving problems. So No Cure for Curiosity is my way to promote the values of a broad liberal arts education. This episode was inspired by Facebook, when I noticed multiple friends of mine asking for suggestions for new TV shows, or book recommendations, or podcasts to try out. Seeing those questions pop up made me think, what if I asked 5 people, university staff, friends, and family, to share their favorite media from last year? Yes, last year. But it doesn't matter how long ago this was recorded, because like a pre-owned car, if you haven't driven it, it's new to you. On this episode, I am sure you will find a book or a TV show or a podcast or a game recommendation that you hadn't heard of before. So let's get started. My first guest was Lauren Gantz. We started off and I asked her to introduce herself.
I am an English professor at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. I hail originally from Kansas and studied at the University of Texas at Austin. So I've traveled all up and down the middle of the United States for the most part. As far as like hobbies and things, I do enjoy being outdoors in pretty much any capacity.
So Lauren, I reached out to you just to ask if you had some suggestions from media that you read, and it could be movies or books or podcasts. You have some examples that you want to share?
So my favorite, I think, was probably Everything Everywhere All at Once, which was fantastic. We really love like absurdist humor and the philosophical issues that it brought up. And of course, the family dynamics were really compelling. And Michelle Yeoh gave a fantastic performance. And I was really happy to see Short Round back in movies again.
Yes.
Much deserved.
I loved that movie also. I'm going to ask you this next question.
Okay.
Can you explain what Everything Everywhere All at Once is about for people who might be interested? Because I also loved it.
Sure.
But it is a, like you said, a crazy, absurdist, creative, wacky movie.
So it's a multiverse story. It's the idea that there are all of these multiple parallel universes where we each live slightly different lives. There are different versions of ourselves. And the main character learns that she can jump from multiverse to multiverse and pick up the skills of whatever her other selves are able to do, whether that be professional chef or a martial arts master, etc. Some of them are extremely weird. There's a multiverse where everyone has hot dog fingers, which is fantastic.
Right.
And the whole conflict of the movie is between the main character and her daughter and the relationship there and the question of like, what is the meaning of existence, basically? Is there a purpose to it? Is there a point to it? So it asks a lot of big questions, but it's not at all pretentious about it, which I really appreciated.
Yes, and Jamie Lee Curtis was fantastic in it. Boy, I loved that cast. And like you said, the other thing I loved about that movie is the story is really about her relationship with her daughter. And I, just having 2 teenagers and experiencing all the insanity that comes with being a parent of 2 teenagers, I found that story so moving. So what else? What else did you see or read or watch or do that you'd recommend?
So we tend to watch a lot of streaming shows, and we are big fans of the Taika Waititi-verse. So Res Dogs is fantastic. We've kept up with that. This was its 2nd season. What We Do in the Shadows, I think this was its 3rd or 4th season. And then Our Flag Means Death, which is all about queer pirates. It's fantastic. We really enjoy his sense of humor and his approach to kind of tackling not just humor, but also some bigger subjects too.
I'm not familiar with Our Flag Means Death or Res Dogs. Are they kind of similarly sort of absurdist character explorations with broader themes of humanity the way Taika Waititi likes to like explore?
Our Flag Means Death definitely is. It's based on an actual historical pirate, Stede Bonin, the gentleman pirate, who was wealthy and had quite a bit of social status, but he decided that he was going to abandon all of that for a life of piracy. And he ended up crossing paths with Blackbeard, and Blackbeard actually took over, and they kind of co-captained together for a while. And so the series is extremely funny, but it's also dealing with finding oneself, family. There's a whole lot of exploration of sexuality and gender identity. And yeah, it's delightful. Hi, buddy. Puppy's coming to see me. sorry.
Does your puppy have any suggestions? how is your puppy's 2022?
It was good. We got him in June. He suggests chewing on Nyla bones and playing at the dog park all the time.
What's his name?
Kieran.
Kieran, and is Kieran enjoying his new house?
He is. He's coming to get his back scratched. So sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah. And let's see. Then I also kept up with the graphic novel series Monstrous by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda, which is another.
Wait, run that name by me again. It's called Monsters.
Monstrous.
Monstrous.
If you say it fast enough, it sounds like monstrous, but it's monstrous.
Okay.
Another kind of fantasy steampunk-ish world, matriarchal civilization with a lot about race relations, because there's arcanics, which are like a hybrid of these ancients. Ancients are kind of like anthropomorphic animals with different sort of powers. Arcanics are hybrids of humans and arcanics, and then you have human beings. And there's a lot of conflict between human beings and arcanics in particular. And the main character is possessed by an old god, and it emerges from her kind of without her ability to control it. And so it's in its seventh volume at this point. So it's a huge, massive, fantastical world with a lot of politics that you kind of have to suss out, but everything gets explained by cats at various points at the ends of each volume. There are talking cats in this world as well. And so you have Professor Tam Tam to explain certain things to you at the end of each volume.
And say again the name of the writer and artist.
Marjorie Liu, L-I-U, and Sana Takeda.
Okay.
I taught the first a few issues of that in my Women in Literature class this spring.
I never heard of it, but I Googled it, and the cover of the first issue is gorgeous.
Art's gorgeous, and then it's won, I don't know how many, it's won, I think, Hugo Awards.
Yes, the first thing that popped up was the Wikipedia page,
mm-hmm.
and it says the series has earned 5 Eisner Awards, which is the major comic book award, mm-hmm. as well as Hugo Awards and Harvey Award Book of the Year in 2018. So those are all prestigious awards. It sounds really fantastic.
Yeah, it definitely has Game of Thrones vibes in terms of, I mean, if you're not somebody who's okay with like pretty obvious gore and explicit violence, maybe not for you. That was kind of the mm-hmm. the reaction among some of my students. They're like, this is a lot of violence. But it's also interesting because you kind of have a female almost anti-hero character, which you don't see, I don't think anyway, all that often in media, at least not pop culture media.
Right.
Unless you're talking about like the femme fatale type, right? Or somebody who's mm-hmm. who's pulling the strings behind the scenes. The main character is very much, she's going to throw hands when she has to. And she is very gruff and swears a lot and is very much in that like straight up and like anti-hero kind of mold in many ways, which is kind of interesting to see.
These are fantastic suggestions. So Lauren Gantz, thank you so much. English professor. In fact, I think I can say tenured English professor. Is that correct?
Yes, this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So thank you for these suggestions.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much to English professor Lauren Gantz for starting us off. If you hear any recommendations on this podcast that you want to check out, you can head to our show notes where I've got them all listed. Our second recommender is Gretel Stock, Dean of University College at UWSP. Here's her introduction.
I am an avid knitter and crafter. I have been knitting, I figured it out recently, almost 20 years now. I have been regularly knitting, which is actually kind of amazing given that I jump from project to project. So it's held my interest for that long. And I'm an avid gamer of all kinds. So I've played video games since I was very young. And also like board games, whether they be strategy or whether they be classic Hasbro board games or role-playing games.
Perfect. So where would you like to start?
So The Crown on Netflix is an extraordinary piece of work that chronicles the life and times of Queen Elizabeth II. It has this interesting intersection of history and artistic interpretation and figuring out what people must have felt like who are in these circumstances. So the whole series itself is rather exquisite in that way of doing the what if, putting things into historical context. But the thing that I like the most about The Crown is that each episode is so carefully crafted to tell a part of the narrative. And in particular, it's not as much the dialogue that gets you, but the skill of mostly the actresses. I mean, the actors are also fantastic, but the actresses, some of which are playing Elizabeth or Diana or Margaret or these other characters, this series of powerful actresses have said so much and emoted so well without saying a word. It's really powerful art. I was absolutely relishing the fifth season this year.
So I've never seen The Crown. Is it about sort of like their day-to-day lives or what kinds of decisions they have to make or their relationship to their country? So like, what are the plots like?
So it focuses on a mostly chronological narrative of the reign of Queen Elizabeth.
Okay.
Both in how the crown as an institution impacted Elizabeth's family, because of course, her father was the spare. And her uncle stepped down from being king so that he could pursue life with a divorced American woman, which is a big theme, the wanting individualism and autonomy and to follow one's dreams versus dedication to this institution of the crown. And so they really focus on what the institution of the crown does to people.
Fantastic. All right. The Crown is suggestion number one. What else you got?
So I'll switch to podcasts. That's sort of my medium of choice these days.
Yeah.
Alice Isn't Dead is a several season fictional podcast that is told by a woman who is driving truck across country looking for her wife. And it's kind of spooky and she has anxiety, which is very relatable. And it's fantastic. I listen to it on road trips, which is especially creepy given that, you know, it centers around creepy stuff happening on the road while she's this trucker. So
is it creepy, like Twilight Zone-ish creepy, or just creepy in realistic narrative and she gets involved in some alarming situations? Like what's the genre?
I would call the genre urban fantasy with a little bit of Lovecraftian thing, like there's secrets beneath the ground kind of conspiracy theory-esque leaning.
Gotcha.
I don't want to spoil any of it because it's delicious, but it's got definitely this creepy vibe, this vibe of what happens when you're isolated, what happens when you're refusing to believe something and have to take that jump into the weird and into the wild to explore it. And putting pieces together, it's a mystery as well of putting the pieces together of where is her wife and then what's going on with these strange, creepy characters that she's repeatedly running into and what's the conspiracy underneath it. And the soundscape in particular is really amazing.
Like kind of a radio play where you're hearing, hear the sounds? And
It's not quite the clap, clap, clap of the, you know, someone walking to the door, but the sound choices they make are intentional. And so it's absolutely fantastic.
That's a fantastic suggestion. Thank you. So what else?
So the nonfiction podcast that I listen to, I mean, there's quite a few of them, but the one that I like the most right now is this podcast called Maintenance Phase.
Yeah, you introduced me to that. I'm now getting hooked on it also.
So Maintenance Phase kind of tickles a couple of things for me. So the two folks who run it are Aubrey Gordon and Michael Hobbs. And Michael Hobbs is an investigative journalist. Audrey is an author and fat scholar and activist. And one of the things they do really well is they take the subject. And in this particular podcast focuses on fad diets and the science and history behind our cultural obsession with obesity and what that means both from a historical perspective, from a sociopolitical perspective, from a racial justice perspective. In fact, so one of their signature set of episodes was them basically taking down the BMI, right? The body mass index. And they go deeply into the history of this of, you know, who started the BMI? What data was it based on? What was it intended to do? Then where did people take it? So they said, like many pseudoscientific things that happen in the fitness and diet industry, the BMI was founded by someone looking at self-reported data that was only white people and mostly white men and was taken from this. And the author themselves said this shouldn't be used as a general health measure. This is a way for us to understand populations. And what, of course, did the industry do is they applied it to individuals, which it was never supposed to do. So we have a index that was developed around wealthy white men that's being applied to people of all racial, ethnic, size backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, and it doesn't really mean anything because it's only based on one type of bodies that they looked at. So they go deep into the research, and I'm a bit of a data nerd, and so they talk about these data sources, like what's self-report data, what's survey data, what's actual measures of human bodies. And over again, they have this theme of what's individual is not always generalizable. And I think that's such an important thing for us to consider.
Yeah. The thing I like about it is the two hosts, Aubrey Gordon and Michael Hobbs, they have a great rapport. Mm-hmm. They both come at these subjects well-prepared, but they also have a sense of humor. They sort of are able to laugh at these things that they're analyzing, demonstrating how silly they are or how manipulative they are. Or like you just described, data can be used for one purpose, but then once it enters the marketplace, this data gets reinterpreted and reimagined and then presented to the public in all kinds of weird ways that the scientists didn't intend.
Also worth noting, lots of swearing.
Like, good to know.
Maybe not good for the 10 and under crowd, you know, at least the pretty gracious use of the F-bomb. So
this was fantastic. Gretel Stock, thank you very much. If people think they recognize your voice, it is because you are the voice at the end of every episode of No Cure for Curiosity. So thanks so much.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
I'm so grateful to Lauren Gantz and Gretel Stock for sharing their favorite media of the last year, but at this point, I wanted someone to recommend novels. So I reached out to my cousin Paula, because I don't know anyone who reads more novels than she does. Here's her intro. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I am Paula Weitzenberg. I've known Dean Luft forever.
Since I was just Shawnee.
Yes. I am not a professor. I actually work for Visa, the credit card company, and people are amazed to know that that's a job, but it is. But when you stick your credit card into something or type it into the internet and you magically get billed and the vendor gets paid, I'm behind how all that works.
And where are you from originally?
I am from Brooklyn, New York, grew up on Long Island, and I've been in Arizona for about 25 years now. And I live here with my husband and my dog. My dog is 10 today. His name is Linus. After the character in your Charlie Brown podcast that I was just listening
to. Oh, we talked about your dog last episode then.
And I am a huge reader. I've got some more time on my hand these days, and I'd say I'm averaging close to 2 books a week.
Yeah, I reached out to you because you read more books faster than anyone I know.
That is
and,
true.
And so I thought if we were going to make sure that book recommendations end up on this episode in this conversation, you would be the exact right person to talk to.
I appreciate that.
But where do you want to start?
I'm going to start with A Man Called Ove, which was written by Frederick Backman. And okay. Backman is my very favorite author. He's a Swedish author. And even though his books are translated into English, they're so beautiful to read. The wording is wonderful. And he goes deep into characters. And that's what I really like in a book. So the reason I'm bringing up A Man Called Ove first is it's, I think, probably his first book or his first book of his that I read. Mm-hmm. But it's also a movie right now with Tom Hanks. It was first a movie in Sweden, which was very good. But then I just yesterday went to see A Man Called Otto, which was the Americanized version of this. And it was also very good.
Okay. But the book is still A Man Called Ove, O-V-E?
Yes.
So I don't know anything about the book, and I saw the trailer for the movie, but I still couldn't figure out what it was about other than Tom Hanks is grumpy.
So he's a grumpy old man, very smart. He knows exactly how things should be done and has no patience for idiots. He goes around calling everybody an idiot. And he is planning to commit suicide.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's sad and happy. And every time he's about to commit suicide, his neighbor accidentally disrupts him. She doesn't know, but this sweet Latina woman moves in next door and just disrupts his life. And then it goes on into the relationship. The dialogue was very good. And I recommend both the book and the movie.
Is it like dark humor? It sounds like it could be funny. Okay.
It was definitely funny. There are some great zingers in there.
Oh, great. That's a fantastic suggestion. Good. I can't wait to read that and or see the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you enjoy that book, then I would follow up with the Bear Town. It's a trilogy. The first one is Bear Town.
Okay.
And it's not something you think you'd be interested in because it's about a small town where hockey is what everyone is into in that town. But the characters are amazing. And it was so rich that he was able to make it into three books.
Wow. And that's also Frederick Backman?
Yeah.
So you said he's from Sweden. Are these books that do they take place in Sweden or is the context and world not? So do you learn about Sweden or is it
you
just
do.
It could be anywhere?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it could be anywhere, but you learn a little bit. It's really about the odd people that are out there.
All right. That sounds great.
And why they're the way they are. They get revealed throughout the story. He's a good storyteller.
I like the suggestions. What else you got?
Another favorite author of mine is Geraldine Brooks. And she had a book come out this year that's on all the bestseller lists. And it's called Horse, H-O-R-S-E, just the animal horse. It's not that simple. It's not just about a horse. Uh-huh. She's an excellent writer. And she allows you to learn a bit of history in her story. So her story is more about a time and place that you're not familiar with. And this book starts in Kentucky right before the Civil War. And it has multiple timelines. So it's in Kentucky and then also in Washington, D.C. present. It is absolutely about a horse. It's based on a real story, a real horse that won the Kentucky Derby. But it also is mostly about racism in America. So from right before the Civil War to present and how it has changed and not changed, and quite a bit about art. So I think a lot of students, no matter what subject they're studying, might find this to be an interesting read.
Yeah. Wow, that's really interesting. I hadn't heard of that book.
And then if you like that book and you like the topic, there's a book that is not a companion book to it, but in my head, it's a companion. It's called The Violin Conspiracy. And similarly, it's about racism. It is about a Black violinist in current times. And he starts playing the violin. He gets his family's old fiddle that's been in the family for generations that's found in the attic, and he gets it cleaned up. And eventually he finds out that it's a priceless Stradivarius. I can't say it right. Stradivarius. Mm-hmm. I got it. And then it goes back and forth in time to how this poor family became in possession of it and how he uses it and goes on in competitions. That book is also very popular. I didn't like it quite as much, but I think it's an important read and a bit more authentic because the author actually is Black and a musician. So it's a little autobiographical in there.
What's the author's name?
The author's name is Brandon Slocum.
Huh, I've not heard of that book either.
Aren't you glad we're having this conversation?
Absolutely. You are doing exactly what I'd hope you do.
Perfect.
So what else you got?
So I've got two more.
Okay.
So True Biz by Sarah Novick, and it's about the deaf community.
Oh.
So it is about a girl who, a little later in life than some kids, more in her teens, is deaf, but she later in life attends a boarding school just for the deaf.
Okay.
And it talks about her having to adjust to that, finally being with people who can, that she could communicate with and that understand her. And in some ways, it's just you're reading about a high school kids, just that there's who's popular, who's not, there's romance, there's struggles with classes, but it's also so much about the deaf community. And you see families that have been deaf for generations versus this girl who's the only one in her family. And the head of the school is someone who can hear, but her parents were deaf. There was a movie like that recently, CODA, Children of Deaf Adults. Mm-hmm. And there's also quite a bit about the controversy in the deaf community about using sign language versus getting implants where you would be able to hear. But some folks feel that that's not right in their culture. So it's pretty interesting to learn about that.
Good suggestions.
One more book. I'm ending on it doesn't sound that fun, but I promise you this is a fun book.
Okay.
And it's called Remarkably Bright Creatures. And I liked it so much, I bought it as gifts for a couple people. I think it's really a universal read. The main character of the book is an octopus. I generally read novels about people, and this is about people and relationships. It's a little bit of fantasy in there, in that it's about an octopus who's very smart and lives in an aquarium and builds a relationship with the cleaner that works in the aquarium and helps her through some tough times and actually helps her to solve a mystery. And it's just an enjoyable book.
Wasn't there just a also a documentary about an octopus?
Yes, there was. There was a documentary, The Octopus Teacher, I think it was.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one, but I've heard people talk about it.
So in Remarkably Bright Creatures, do you learn a lot about like ocean life in general or just this particular octopus?
A little bit. I wouldn't say a ton, but a little bit. But okay. You learned, yeah, about octopi.
So were those some of your favorite books from 2022?
Yes, they were. I don't know if they were all published in 2022, but I read them all in 2022.
All right, Paula Weitzenberg, you did exactly what I was hoping you'd do, which is I've read none of these books that you've talked about. All of them sound fantastic, though. How do you read books so quickly?
Experience.
Have you ever taken a speed reading class? It is 2 novels a week.
No, just practice. I admit I don't read every word. I kind of can skim through a sentence unless it's, you know, something that really stands out. So, and it's just part of my everyday routine. I read with breakfast always. Yeah, I could just settle in if it's a good book.
Thanks so much for this conversation.
I look forward to hearing it. I will be listening to all your podcasts.
Remember, all the recommendations you hear on this episode of No Cure are listed in the show notes, and they'll be posted on the Facebook page, so you don't need to scribble them all down. The fourth person I reached out to is Chris Williams, who is also a professor of English at UWSP. I knew he would have great movie and gaming suggestions, video and board games. Here's Chris's introduction.
I am a big video gamer and a big board gamer. I just love games sort of in general. You know, I mean, I grew up in the 1980s. So the thing is, I grew up with the Atari and the Nintendo and have graduated on to other things. But I also just like board games. I like tactile games in addition to video games. So
I reached out to you just to ask if you have suggestions of any kind of media or games that you enjoyed in 2022 that you could recommend. So is the first one you can start us off with?
Well, I've seen a surprising amount of movies this year, but I do have to say Jordan Peele's Nope is kind of genius. I really, really like that movie. I kind of want to describe what it is, but I kind of don't because it sort of ruins what is kind of going on in that particular film, but it's just a beautifully shot movie, very well acted. And it's told in this very interesting way where scenes are there's a kind of fragmentary nature to it. Things are a little bit out of order, not exactly Pulp Fiction style, but but something where he'll show you some things and you're not quite sure what those mean. And then as the film goes on, you reflect on those later or he returns to them. And it's very accessible.
How would you rank that with his other two films, Us and Get Out?
Strangely enough, I've never seen them.
Really?
Yeah, this is the first Jordan Peele. I'm familiar with Key and Peele, but I've had Us and Get Out on my list of movies to see and still haven't seen them yet. So I don't know.
Well, there you go. I have a recommendation for you then. Because if you like Nope, I definitely think you would enjoy those other two movies, especially Get Out. I just love that movie. But all of his movies, while they explore similar themes, I don't feel like he just treads the same ground. He finds really creative new ways to use horror and science fiction to explore these kinds of larger themes of race. It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to check them out. The other movie that I did want to mention is The Menu.
Yes.
And it stars Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy. It's a lot about class warfare, and it's also about kind of art and aesthetics and how those tie into class warfare. And I was very surprised. I knew very little going in to that particular film, and I just thought it was a very, very enjoyable picture.
What I loved about that movie was how it, besides the class issues, the way in which it explored an artist's relationship with the audience. And you're right, you know, both the movies you're suggesting, the more you know about them going in, the less of an experience you'll have. It's actually better to know almost nothing about both those movies.
I think that's probably true.
What else you got? Other movies, shows, games?
There's a game called Marvel Snap. It is available for iOS, Android, and stuff like that. But it's a free game, just like a one-on-one card game where you build your own deck and then play against other people. You're playing sort of superheroes and supervillains into locations, and those locations they're randomized each game and affect the gameplay in different ways. So you're kind of never playing the same game twice because it's kind of shifting the grounds constantly. But as far as little time wasters go, this is a really, really good one that's not dumb at all. I was a comic book kid. So like, I love all the little obscure Marvel characters that appear. And, you know, I'm like, oh, cool. I can't believe Arnim Zola is a card in this game, you know, or yeah. whatever, you know, like some strange character that nobody's ever heard of.
So you mentioned you also like board games. Do you have any suggestions for favorite board games?
The other board game that I wanted to mention, and again, this is just, it's like a bit of weirdness. It's a solo board game, which a lot of people are unfamiliar with the concept, though we shouldn't be, because solitaire, you know, the card, you know, people play solitaire all the time. The thing is, there are more complicated board games that are built just to play solo. And I have just gotten into a game that was released in 2021 called Final Girl. And it is, of course, based on the horror premise of The Final Girl, and you play a final girl. They're kind of send-ups of particular slasher films. There's a Nightmare on Elm Street scenario. There's a Friday the 13th scenario.
Poltergeist. I just pulled it up online. Yeah, there's a Poltergeist version or story.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've played the Poltergeist one. I've played Carnival of Blood, and I've played the Nightmare on Elm Street one, which is like Nightmare on Maple Avenue or something like that. Yeah. They very much, yeah, they duplicate the experience of slasher films. They are solitaire. They're tricky, and there's an element of randomness to it. But that being said, these are super fun. And again, I like games when they're tactile. I like feeling the pieces. I like a game that can beat me. And this one can, and partly that's because of randomness. But if you play these smart, you can do that as well. The way the system works, you buy a core box called Final Girl, and it's about $20. Mm-hmm. And that cannot be played alone. And you have to buy then what they call these feature films. And these are scenarios to go with it. And each of them costs about $20 a piece. And there was 5 in the initial series. So if you like horror movies and you like games, you might want to check these out. And they change the mechanics according to, you know, the slasher and, you know, in smart ways. I mean, like the Nightmare on Maple Avenue or whatever is you can't hurt the bad guy and he can't hurt you if you're awake. And so there's an awake asleep mechanic and, you know, they all do their own sort of thing.
Chris Williams, professor of English, board game and video game connoisseur. Thanks so much for joining me for the conversation.
Sure. Thank you.
By the way, all the little musical stingers you hear in between guests were written by Derek Carden, who also wrote our theme. My final guest to share some of her favorite things from last year is Catherine Lounsbury. Catherine is a pianist, a vocal coach, an educator, comedian, music director, composer, and arranger. She was on the faculty of the American Musical and Dramatic Academy for a decade, but she recently got a job as a musical executive for Cocomelon. If you do not know what Cocomelon is, you do not know any toddlers. Here is her introduction.
I'm Catherine Lounsbury. I live in Los Angeles. My wife and I are raising a highly verbal, intense 3.5-year-old boy named Teddy. And I currently, besides being exhausted, also have a new job as a music executive for Cocomelon, which is one of the biggest kids shows. So
congratulations.
Thanks. Lots of toddler music and toddler things in my life right now.
Thank you so much for joining me for this conversation. So where do you want to begin?
Let's start with, I fell in love with a podcast this past year, and I'm like an adjacent political junkie. I like to keep up with things. And there's a podcast called Sisters-in-Law, and it's four women who are frequent contributors on MSNBC, Joyce Vance, Jill Winebanks, Barb McQuaid, and Kimberly Atkins-Store. Okay. And they are all like badass lawyers, so smart. And every episode starts out with like a folksy question. They're like, so how do you take care of yourself in the winter? And they're sweet. And then they pick like political or law issues from that week and they rip it apart. And they're so smart. But they're so kind. They sound like, because I grew up in the Midwest, I grew up in Milwaukee. They sound like my elementary school teachers, but they're such badasses. So it's like really interesting and comforting all at the same time.
And the show is called Sisters-in-Law?
Sisters-in-Law. Yeah.
So I'm looking it up. I'm having a hard time finding it because Sisters-in-Law brings up so many podcasts.
If you do it, hashtag, and then all one word, Sisters-in-Law, it comes up for me.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you. I've never heard of it before.
Oh, good. Okay.
So what else you got?
So I got freaked out. I was like, oh my God, I don't have a book to recommend. I'm embarrassed at how little I read. But I did remember that I got a book. I have it here. It's called The Puzzler, and it's by A.J. Jacobs. And you may know him. He did another book called like The Year of Living Biblically.
Yes, that's how I know him.
This is all about like, well, it says one man's quest to solve the most baffling puzzles ever, from crosswords to jigsaws to the meaning of life. What I really loved about this book is he actually talks about the history of crossword puzzles.
Wow.
And interestingly, it's just, I'll share one little tidbit, because the book is like, it's full of like cool little stories and then puzzles. So It's like a really fun read. One, just the fun tidbit I want to share is that when crossword puzzles first started, they were viewed as very lowbrow.
Really?
Yeah. The first paper, it wasn't the New York Times. It had a different name. It was like the New York something. They didn't want to do it because it was a very lowly pursuit.
Huh.
Yeah. And then now you think about it, people are very like, oh, I do the Sunday Times.
Right.
Anyway, it's a really fun read. It's easy. And like, you don't necessarily have to go in order, but I love fun facts like that and origin stories. So it's just fun to see the history of that.
That's a fun suggestion. Thank you.
It's funny, you know, I referenced earlier, like my wife and I, we're just exhausted. We're tired. We're older moms. We have this toddler. So usually by the time he goes to bed, we don't really want to watch a movie. But there was one movie I did see this year that I absolutely adored, Glass Onion. I just thought it was phenomenal. I was in from the second it started. I didn't feel distracted. I thought the actors were phenomenal. The story, the pacing, the soundtrack, the location, just a movie that really takes you away. It's not super violent. It's not super controversial, just enjoyable entertainment that tickles you too, you know? And I actually got to watch it twice, and it was fun to watch it the second time, knowing how it all turns out, to see if I could see clues that I wouldn't have noticed the first time through.
I agree with you. It was such a fun movie. It's by Rian Johnson, who did Knives Out. And It's not really a sequel to Knives Out. It's sort of like in the same universe as Knives Out with the same detective, Daniel Craig's Benoit Blanc.
I know. I mean, he's got shades of Columbo, I would say.
Right.
You know, he sort of seems a little befuddled, but is also brilliant. And also the outfits he wore were so distinct in the movie, too, which I really loved.
The one thing about Knives Out is there's a lot of attention paid to setting and outfits and scenery. And this movie has an even more beautiful location. It's a really fun movie.
Yeah.
That's a great suggestion.
And then lastly, just a couple of TV shows. I mean, there's so much good TV now. It's overwhelming. You know, I'm from the days of three networks and,
me too.
You know, there was like, you know, we all watch the same things. And now somebody could be like, oh, this is the best show ever. And you've never even heard of it. But ones that came to mind that all sort of hit different categories. I was a big fan of White Lotus, both seasons. I did think the second season was just a blast. And the shows I picked to share are ones that like I couldn't wait to watch. You know? So White Lotus, Bad Sisters on Apple TV, phenomenal show. Basically the story of, I think it's five sisters. Some of them are plotting to kill their brother-in-law.
Okay.
It's dark. It's hilarious. It's real. There's like this great banjo melody that recurs that is sort of major and minor, which really sets the tone for the show. You're like, God, this is so dark and I'm rooting for this murder to happen, but I don't know how I feel about it. So Bad Sisters was great. Severance was wonderful.
That's one of my favorite shows on the air. The cast was amazing. What did you like about it?
I loved the concept of it. I mean, so if anybody doesn't know, the concept is there people who choose to basically have something done to their brain where when they're at work, they only know their work life and they don't know their outer life. And when they're in their outer life, they don't know their work life.
Right. And I think this show has really smart things to say about our relationship with our work.
I think that's the brilliance of the show. Nothing about it is fantastical, but they take these little like kernels of truth from corporate life and then put like a weird piece of glitter on it.
Right.
Like the, and again, this isn't giving anything away, but like the way they reward their employees is sort of really weird, but not so far off.
Those are great. Bad Sisters and Severance are great suggestions.
Did you see Bad Sisters?
I have not. No, I've never even heard of it.
It's great. And then I have one more last suggestion, and I saved it for last because it's usually like, that's kind of a palate cleanser show we'll watch after, like if there's something dark. And that is just Abbott Elementary. it's just a perfect sitcom.
Yeah.
Quinta Brunson, who's done a lot of stuff on YouTube, and she was also on HBO Black Lady Sketch Show. She is kind of a Leslie Knope type character, mm-hmm. you know, from Parks and Rec. She's like this do-gooder young teacher working with these older seasoned teachers. And it's just, it feels like an 80s sitcom. It has that comforting feel to it, but also with that sharp, great writing of today. But it has sweet moments. And I love that. I love when sitcoms can strike that balance. Like, we live in such a smart kind of snarky time and people can be so clever. And I'm getting a little tired of that, as much as I respect it and appreciate it. And so there's something nice about Abbott Elementary that's rumbling beneath the surface at all times, that it's so smart and it's so clever, but they're not showing it. It's not flashy right. in that way. And it's a great setting, you know, sort of like an underfunded elementary school. The principal's a mess. They're all super likable. And it's been cleaning up at award shows. And I love that because it's a very simple premise. It feels very old school, but just really well done. Just a solid show.
Yeah. And like you said, every time I turn on Golden Globes or Emmys, it just sweeps. It's incredibly popular. I've only watched one episode, but I feel mm-hmm. like with the amount of awards it's winning, I definitely need to give it another chance.
Yeah, because sometimes you watch something and you're like, oh my God, that was so dark. I feel so heavy. I can't go to bed. Let's watch an Abbott Elementary.
I like that. That's perfect. It's like a little lemon sorbet at the end of the night.
Yes, it is. Like, really well done, though. Fresh lemons.
Yes.
They've used a microplane and they got the lemon rind in there, too.
I really appreciate that you understood the assignment and you did like one thing from every category: podcast, book, movie, TV shows. Catherine Lounsbury, thank you so much for doing this. This is a blast. Your suggestions are great. I definitely think there's something in there for everybody.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, and I can't wait to hear everyone else's suggestions.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kidneys. Red copper kettles and warm wooden mittens. Brown paper packages.
That is the a cappella group Pentatonix, and this episode was about our favorite things. If you heard something here you want to check out, or if you want to share your favorite media from this past year, reach out to No Cure for Curiosity on our Facebook page, our Instagram, or our new TikTok account, thanks to my brilliant niece Claire. Please let your friends and family know about No Cure for Curiosity and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps new people find our show. Our theme song was written by Derek Carden, and our logo is by artist and graphic designer Ryan Dreimiller. It's a new semester, and we are going to start rolling out episodes of No Cure for Curiosity, so I'll see you soon.
This podcast is brought to you by University College at University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. Our mission is to provide coordinated, intentional, and inclusive services and opportunities through our core values of connecting, supporting, collaborating, and engaging. Learn more about UW Stevens Point and all our programs at uwsp.edu.